We're holding on the first line.
Maybe the pinch to the ship.
I've asked many times.
No.
If you'd be willing to, I know I would be overjoyed because it's hassle finding a sub every time. All right. Okay, we're holding on New Testament days, first line of the wide lines. Okay, continuing on the topic, the Gemara had started yesterday on the order of Aliyahs. The Mishnah had said that a Kohen gets first, and then a Levi, and then Israel, if they die for Shalom. I'm going to buy a Naktinan, we have a Kabbalah. Ein Shem Kohen Mispar de Chavila. If there's no Kohen, then the bundle breaks apart. So what does that mean? Rashi has two explanations. One is that the Levi loses his place altogether. He doesn't get an Aliyah at all. And the second explanation from Rabbi Yitzchak, from another one of Rashi's Rebbeim, Rabbi Yitzchak ben Yehuda, is that explanation was from Rabbi Yitzchak ben Yehuda that the Levi doesn't get an Aliyah at all. Then Rabbi Yitzchak HaLevi says differently that no, what it means is there's no particular order. A Levi can get any Aliyah then, not after the second one. And then Tosfos brings a third possibility, which is that the Levi still gets the second Aliyah. You'll have a Yisrael gets the first Aliyah, then a Levi, and then a bunch of other Yisrael.
Why should a Levi get a third Aliyah when a Kohen is absent?
Because the usual reason is you want it to be right after the Kohen. If there's no Kohen over here, then according to the second explanation of Rashi, according to Rabbi Yitzchak HaLevi, there's no particular preference where a Levi should get an Aliyah. Lamaisa nowadays we're familiar with that usually we try to get a Levi instead of a Kohen. That doesn't seem to be according to any of these three. So, because there are different other opinions among the Rishonim and the Beis Yosef, and the Ramah both bring that the minhag that we do nowadays that in that case you call a Levi first, because after all a Kohen gets first because we said yesterday the Kiddushin or whatever before it, the Kohen is part of Shevet Levi. So if there's no Kohen, then the next preference is to give a Levi, and then you have Yisraelim after him. Ordinarily, the usual rule is you don't want a Levi or a Kohen to be after Yisraelim for reasons that the Gemara is going to talk about soon. So the Pagam. People might think this is a real Kohen or a real Levi, and that's why he's not getting in his proper place.
But here, too many times, even there's a Kohen, and they call somebody
who's not right.
He's not a Kohen. All the time.
Properly speaking, well, so yesterday the Gemara had said that in principle Yisrael could get the first Aliyah. Rav Huna used to get first. However, that's only when it's the God of Adar, exactly, because otherwise it's going to lead to Machloket. In reality, if there's a Kohen around and you don't want him to have an Aliyah because you need Yisraelim to get Aliyah, you're supposed to send the Kohen out.
Then it's
questionable to do that. Okay, anyway, let's continue. The Amr Abaya, also Abaya says Naktin, and we also have a Kabbalah, Im Ein Shem Levi Kore Kohen. If there's no Levi, then a Kohen gets the second Aliyah. Which implies, it sounds like it means, in other words, that you have two different Kohen, and one gets Rishon and one gets Sheni. So you might ask, Eini, is that so? Va Amr Abiyachan Kohen Ha Kohen La Yikra, Vishem Pagamish HaRishon. One Kohen should not lane after a second Kohen, because people are going to think the first Kohen was no good, and that's why we had to call it the second one.
It's not to believe. If he was no good, why should we call him first?
He was called, and then we realized after he had an Aliyah, wait a minute, he's not a good Kohen. He's a Cholol or whatever. And Levi Achalevi, Levi Kribashim Pagam Shneim. And one Levi shouldn't lane after another one, because both of them, there may be a Pagam. People aren't going to know which one is the no good one. People are going to think either the first one wasn't a good Levi, and that's why we have to call another, or the second Levi is not a Levi, he's Yisrael.
What kind of Pagam could
that's the Gemara is going to discuss. So you can't call two Kohen and one after the other, or two Levi and one after the other. What are you supposed to do? What do you mean that you call a Kohen and then another Kohen? The answer is Kikamrin and Ba'osik Kohen. What Abaya meant was if there's no Levi, then the same Kohen gets another Aliyah, which is what we do nowadays. Now Tosfos points out an interesting thing. In the times of the Mishnah, the minhag was that only the first Ola said the bracha before, said the Asher Bracha Banu, and the last Ola said the bracha Asher Nasa Banu at the end of his Aliyah. All the Olam in the middle did not, the first Ola at the end, and all the other Olam beginning and end, and the last Ola at the beginning did not say bracha.
Wow.
That was the minhag in those days.
They used to,
each person used to lay in their own path. That's also true, yeah. Later on, the Gemara tells us in Megillah that later on there was a problem, as the Gemara is going to say soon, Mishnah Nachnasin and Mishnah Yotzin, people come in the middle of laning, people leave in the middle of laning, they're going to think that there's no bracha to be said at the beginning or the end respectively, so then eventually they made the takana that everybody says their own individual bracha. So Tosfos points out, if we're talking over here according to the way that it used to be, where most of the Olim don't say their own brachos, then if a Kohen gets an aliyah and then he's getting another aliyah, what distinguishes one aliyah from the next? So it says he'd have to go sit down in between. On the other hand, nowadays, when each one says their own brachos anyhow, then it's no problem. The Kohen can say the second set of brachos, and everybody realizes it's a new aliyah for that reason, because it's a new set of brachos. And there are other Rishonim out there, I think, that Rambam holds that even when there are separate brachos, the Kohen still has to sit down in between. Well, the Maaseh, you see that we're not knowing in that nowadays. Okay. Interesting thing, by the way, so, a side thing. I saw something when I was looking things over. I came across something, I think the Mordechai says, that if you have a city that's all Kohenim, because all Gemara is saying you shouldn't call one Kohen after the other, what do? He says, call up one Kohen, and then if you don't have enough Yisraelim or Levim to fill up the Aliyah, he says, call women up for Aliyah. Yeah, unusual. The Mordechai, I think it is. Because the Gemara tells us in Megillah, in principle, women could have Aliyahs, except we don't give them a Pnei Kohen at Tibur. But here, where there's a problem, apparently, where he holds, where there's a problem at Pagan, Lamaisa, most other Rishonim don't hold that way. And the Halacha, as Paskin in Shulchan Aruch, is an interesting thing. If there's only one Yisroel in town and everybody else is Kohenim, the Yisroel gets first, because of Da'as HaShalom, instead of the Kohenim arguing among themselves which one gets first, we give the Yisroel, then we give all the Kohenim, and there's no problem at Pagan, because you don't have a choice. If there's all Kohenim, then yeah, you just give Kohen after Kohen. If there's yeah, very, very.
Do we know any town where there's only Kohenim?
I've heard that in the island of Juba, off Tunisia, it used to be a place of all Kohenim.
Now that's also
yeah, so.
Kohenim and the Deen.
Yeah.
Mostly, I don't know.
Yeah. Okay, let's continue. Okay, the Gemara. Maishna Levi Achal Levi Deitav Gam Shneim. What are you saying? You said that if there's a Kohen after a Kohen, people are going to say the first one's not a good Kohen, but the second one is. With a Levi, we're saying both of them, either one, people might think is no good. What's the difference? How can you think Gam Shneim? Da'amri Chad Minayu Lav Levi. People are going to think one of them or the other is not a Levi, and that's why they had to call up the other one. Well, not both, but when it could be either one. It doesn't have to be the first one. Why is it Kohen Acha Kohen Nami? I mean, Chad Minayu Lav Kohenu. Why is it by Kohen Acha Kohen? We're saying the Pagam would be only on the first one. It would be a given that the second one is a good Kohen. What's the difference? The answer is, fine, you could have a case where we have a Chazaka. We know the father of the second one is a valid Kohen. Automatically, then we know, okay, but we don't automatically know, the Gemara asks. Why? First of all, the Gemara asks, Hachin Nami D'Mukhsik Lan Bavurda.
The father is a Kohen.
Because he could have married a Grusha or a Chalala. Right. But first,
the Gemara. Did you give the second say in the same aliyah that the first
one
had?
No. Since we're saying, no, if we're talking about here,
what's the chash of the first one wasn't good?
No, the chash.
The aliyah and the second gets the second aliyah.
Ah, so there are mafoshim we'll talk about. I mean, it might not be a problem. It might not be, the Gemara is going to say soon, Shema Yotin, that people are going to leave in the middle and not realize how many aliyahs there were. Right, so there are mafoshim we'll talk about. Maybe it's not a problem on a regular Shabbos or Yom Tov or whatnot when each person has their own individual part of it. Anyway, you can count up the aliyahs and know who got what. It's more an issue, for example, Chalamoid Sukkot, when you have many people reading over the same portion over and over, or Hanukkah, or a couple of other times, when you have different people reading over the same Sukkim, or almost the same Sukkim, then you can get confused.
Where do you call a Kohen Chal? You know he's a Chal. You know he's a
Chal. 1 second. We'll get to that in a second. So the question is, fine, so the same way you could say if you have two Levim, let's say you have a case where you know the second one has a chazaka in town, that his father is a Levi, so again, what would be the problem? Again, why are you saying there could be a pgam on either one? Ella, no. Rather, let's try like this. Amri Mamzeres.
Basically, because you call the second one, that's why this looks.
Well, that's what we're assuming by the claim. We're assuming that the claim, the pgam would be on the first one. The question is.
Second Aliyah.
No, we're talking about the Levim or the Kohenim?
Kohenim.
The Kohenim, so that's the thing. If we call... No, okay, so there are Mephoshim also. I should also mention...
Mephoshim Pshat is
you called one Kohen, yeah. Then you're calling up another. People are going to think, wait a minute, we know a Kohen... No, not the same Aliyah, Sheni. But still, people are going to think, we ended up laning the first Aliyah.
We made a mistake,
we called up the wrong person. But fine, but that's what I was going to say. The one Mephoshim will explain that even you called up the wrong person, fine, but the Aliyah is still an Aliyah. You were yoked to that part of Kriya the third, and you now need another Kriya. Yeah.
I mean, let's face it, people in Shul know, some Gemayim don't know what they're doing.
There is that also. Okay, anyway, let's go on. Ella, no, we could say the reason with Levim is Amri Mamzeres and Nisin and Nosiv Apostle Lazari. You could argue that what even if, let's say, you know the second person's father has a chazaka of being a Levi, still people might start thinking that he married a Mamzeres or a Nisina, and therefore he apostled his son. His son is now considered a Mamzer or a Nosin and doesn't really have the status of a Levi anymore. So then, Hachanami, so the same thing with Koyanim. Amri Grusha is Chalut to Nosiv, Ba'achle Lazari, the same thing with a Koyan. You could always, you know the second person's father was a Kohen, but still, there's always the possibility that he married a Grusha or a Chalutza, and then he's considered a Cholo. Exactly, then he's Yisrael. And that's the answer. So safe, Levi Nikonavi. Because after all, if he were to be a Cholo, it's true, he descends from Shevet Levi in that case. His father was a Kohen. Nevertheless, a Cholo is not considered a Levi for that purpose. A Cholo is considered a Yisrael. So therefore, it's like this. With Kohenim, people aren't going to think the second one there's any problem with, because there's no possibility of a person whose father was a Kohen being considered a Levi. Either his mother was valid to marry a Kohen, and he himself was a Kohen, or his mother was invalid to marry a Kohen, and then he's a Yisrael. There's no middle ground. Therefore, the problem could only be on the first one. With a Levi, since you have the possibility that his father could have married a Mamzeres or a Nesina, and therefore he'd be downgraded to a Yisrael, either one. So if you have a Levi and then a Levi, if a Levi is called second and then another Levi is called Pashlishi, people might think, either one of them, people might think that maybe we realized the first one was no good, so we have to call a real Levi. Or the other way around, the first one was a good Levi, the second one is a Yisrael. We know his father is a Levi, but his mother must have been a Mamzeres. So now the question is, Laman, who are we worried about is going to make such mistakes?
So let me ask you a question. Al Chodesh, it's called 4 years. A Chal Kohen and a Chal Levi, because we know that the Gam Levi, they would come third or fourth?
Either one. They're considered full-fledged Yisraelim, yeah. Okay, so Laman, who are we worried about is going to make such mistakes? Are we talking about the people who are sitting there in shul for the whole laning? They see that the first person, that the first Kohen counts towards the seventh. So they know, therefore, it's not that we had to call up another Kohen because then we would have had eight Aliyahs instead of seven. So no, rather the problem is for the sake of the people who leave in the middle of laning. They may not realize, they're not there for all the Aliyahs, they may not realize that we ended up having only seven Aliyahs. We didn't call one extra Aliyah in order to make up for no good Kohen. They're the ones who might think that there was a problem with the Kohen or the Levi, is the case, maybe.
Yoytzin, meaning the people...
The people who leave. Who leave in the middle of laning. Shokhala b'nei Galil of Reb Chelva. The people of the Galil sent a message to a Shaila to Reb Chelva. Okay, our Mishnah tells us that you have Kohen and then Levi and then Yisrael. Achareyan b'Kohen. Who comes after, is there any specific Seder among the Yisraelim? So you have seven Aliyahs on Shabbos, let's say. So after you've disposed of Kohen and Levi, the other five Aliyahs, is there any particular order with Nedav Kishol?
Between Yisraelim.
Between Yisraelim, yeah. He didn't know the answer. So he went and asked Rabbi Yitzchak Napcha. Amalei, he says, Achareyan Kohen Tamar Chachamim Hamamunin Parnosim Al Tzibur. The next ones you call up Tamar Chachamim who are appointed as Parnosim, as leaders over the Tzibur. There's a couple of different explanations what Parnosim means. Rashi quotes over here from a Gemara in Shabbos that a Talmid Chacham who's suitable to be appointed a Parnos Al Tzibur is somebody who you can ask him a halacha any place in the Torah and he'll know the answer on the spot. So first you call up the Talmid Chacham who have actually been appointed Parnosim, like local Rabbanim or whatever. Next comes the Talmid Chachamim who are suitable to be appointed to that, but they haven't been appointed yet. Meloshin Parnas, Meloshin, they provide Parnasa, Beruchmius, and maybe also Begashmius to the town. Vacharen, Bnei Tamar Chachamim, Shabbaseim, Mimunim Parnasim Al Tzibur. Next comes the sons of the Tamar Chachamim, who are appointed as Parnasim, so the sons also get a certain covenant. Vacharen, Rosh HaKnesiyas, V'chol Adam, and after them come the heads of the shul, the presidents of the shul, and everybody else. Machlokes among Meforshim, whether do we mean the president of the shul then gets shishi and anybody else gets shvi, or do we mean the president of the shul and everybody else are on an equal level? This is, by the way, from our Gemara, is one of the sources for the idea that shishi is a special aliyah, because we're saying over here, if we say that first Rosh HaKnesiyas and then B'chol Adam gets shvi, then you see that shishi is an important aliyah. It's also based on the Zohar, shlishi because he's the first Yisrael, yeah.
Shishi is important
because he's the first Yisrael. Shishi, according to this, Shishi is important because it's the one that's reserved for Rosh HaKnesiyas. That's supposed to be for the president of the world.
More than Shishi or V.
What?
Shishi is more important than
Shishi.
Yeah,
in that sense.
Or
yeah.
They're all good.
What?
They're all good.
Yeah. The Aruch HaShulchan makes that point. He says, yeah, you have people who think that if they're called up for review, you come issue, it's like a great insult.
Oh, that's
Schulchan.
That's Schulchan. Huh. Like
oh, really?
The
old president of the Shul, Hartfield. Another question.
What, he refused,
she yeah, meaning he dropped the Chuck Ravi in order that people shouldn't think that. Okay, another Shaila. Shocholei b'nei Golil l'Rav Chelva. Another Shaila that the people of Galil sent to Rav Chelva. Ma'u likris b'chumashim b'beth ekneses b'tzibur. Are you allowed to learn from chumashim in shul? Chumashim, we don't mean printed chumashim. Obviously, they didn't have in those days. We mean they're made exactly like Sifrei Torah, except instead of all five chumashim being sewn together in sheets, it's one individual chumash written in a scroll. Are you allowed to learn from those b'tzibur? So it's a continuous scroll of chumash b'reishis or chumash shmos or whatever. Are you allowed to learn in them? Again, lo have a biyade, he didn't know the answer. Also, shayla little bitzchok napcha, lo have a biyade, when asked bitzchok napcha, he didn't know either. Also, shol be medrasha, he went and asked him medrasha, pashtu o mehodo o mevshmo banachmeni o merab yechanan, and they answered it based on what Rabshmo banachmeni says in the name of Rabbi Yechanan, Rabbi Yonasan, really it's supposed to be, that Sefer Torah shechosu yuriya achas, he says it did. If a Sefer Torah is missing even one sheet of parchment, ain't coded by, then you're not allowed to live in it. So therefore, in other words, they figured, by the same logic, if you're saying you have a whole Sefer Torah which is made of 60 or 70 or whatever it is sheet, and one sheet is missing, you're not allowed to lay in it, how much more so if it's only one chumash and it's missing all the other four chumashim that you can't lay in it? However, the Gemara says, well, actually, that's not really a valid comparison. Hasam mechser b'milse, because the difference is when it's missing one sheet, there's something missing within what's supposed to be there. It's supposed to be a Sefer Torah, and it's missing one sheet of three or four or whatever it is columns. Mashenken a chumash, hachalai mechser b'milse, where the chumash is one complete unit by itself. So therefore, lavdafka, can you prove that just because you can't lay in a Sefer Torah that's missing one sheet, that you can't lay in an individual chumash? There is
it's a continuous scroll.
No, it's a continuous scroll in the same way as a regular of that chumash. So it's a scroll like our Sefer Torah, except instead of being a big scroll that has all five chumashim, it's a scroll that has one chumash. But there is a big machlokas among the Rishonim. When we say over here it's missing one sheet, you can't lay in it, does that imply that if it's missing less than a sheet, let's say it's missing one word or one letter, are you allowed to lay in it? So there's different opinions about it. One opinion that Rashba brings, that Rambam brings, is that no, if it's missing even one letter, you can't lay in it. The reason we're mentioning one sheet is because, first of all, the Rashba says one answer is because if it's missing one letter, let's say, for example, it's missing a letter in Chumash Bereishis, let's say. You can use it to lay in from Chumash Shmos or Vayikra, because at least that complete Chumash in the Sefer Torah is there complete. Mashenken, it's missing one sheet. Even, let's say, it's missing a sheet in Bereishis, you can't lay in from any of the other chumashim. A sheet is a major thing. On the other hand, there's a Tosfos in Megillah that wants to say that based on our Gemara and based on some other Gemaras that no, in fact, only if it's missing a whole sheet can you not lay in it, but if it's missing one word, you could. There are other Mephoshim we talk about. Maybe there's a difference if it's missing a sheet at the beginning or the end versus someplace in the middle.
Yeah,
the halacha is if it's missing even one letter, you're not allowed to. However, in Shulchan Aruch it says, in a pinch, if you don't have another Sefer Torah available, b'diavad, then you can rely on the Rashba's Shitta that if there's something missing in one chumash, but another whole chumash is complete, then you can lay in that whole chumash, which is complete. But if it's missing a yiriyah, then yeah, you can't lay in from it at all. And actually, the Rosh says that one reason why we mention a yiriyah, let's say you have all the yiriyahs there, you have all the sheets there, but one particular yiriyah got detached from the rest of the Sefer Torah, you still can't lay in from it. Even though you have everything there, you have
everything. Completely detached?
Yeah, completely detached, yeah. Up to a certain point. If more than a certain amount of the stitches come out, then no, you can't. But here we're talking about, let's say, so you had, you know, the whole Torah was sewn together, one sheet was taken out, fixing or whatever, so but you still have it there, it's still in the own Torah, you're still putting it on the bimah, it's not attached, still no good. What? So if you have a case where it's possible, yes, in some cases, if you don't have anything else to lay in, other than a possible Sefer Torah, you lay in without it. Yeah, but then, yeah. Okay. If you don't have a Sefer Torah, but then you don't say the brachas, yeah. So, Rabba and Rabbi Yosef d'Amitavayu, ain't current b'chumoshim, but it's necessary to make boit zibur. So Rabba and Rabbi Yosef both say you're not allowed to lay in b'chumoshim and shul because of the covet of the zibur. Because it makes them look poor, like they can't even afford a Sefer Torah. There's an interesting thing. The Yerushalmi tells a story that there was a town in Eretz Yisrael where a local Goyish general brought their Sefer Torah. So they went and asked the Shaila, are we allowed to learn from Chumashim? And they told them no. And the reason, the Yerushalmi there doesn't give the reason to make Moed Sidur, it gives a different reason. Because if the people know they can't learn from Chumashim, they're going to feel so bad about it that they're missing Kriyas HaTorah week after week. They're going to get whatever money they have together and stretch themselves to buy a new Sefer Torah. Whereas if they could just learn with Chumashim, they'd just say, okay, we'll learn with Chumashim and never bother buying another yet. Also, Rabbi and Rabbi Yosef Dami Tavai. Also, Rabbi and Rabbi Yosef both say, "Hi, Sefer Haftarta." Also, the Mikra Rebbe Shabbos. A Sefer of Haftaras, you're not allowed to lay in from it on Shabbos. A Sefer of Haftaras, meaning where you take, again, you know, this is before printing, so this is in when they had writing and when everything was written in scrolls. So you're right, like they have the Haftarah books nowadays, all the Haftaras written one after the other in a scroll. You're not allowed to lay on. You're not allowed to lay in with it on Shabbos. My time of the Lanitim Lekosid. The reason is because such a thing is not supposed to be written in the first place. So Rash said you can only write a complete book of Nevi'im together. You can write a whole Sefer Yeshua, a whole Sefer Shoshu. The Tosfos Rid goes even further. He says if you want to write Nevi'im, you have to write all of them. All eight Nevi'im, or I guess the same thing would be with Ksuvim, although he doesn't say.
Say the same thing about the Chumash.
No, Chumashim is different. You're allowed to write one individual Chumash, but the Tosfos Rid learns that you're not allowed to write individual books of Nevi'im. They have to be written all together. But anyway, according to leaving that aside, according to Rashi, you're allowed to write a whole Sefer of Navi, but not individual excerpts from it that make up the Haftarah. Yeah, we'll get to that. We'll learn the rest of the speech of Gemara, and then we can talk about that. Ma'abra Ravashi says in that case, a Sefer of Haftarah is like that, you're not even allowed to move on Shabbos. My time at all calls it a mikra, because you can't use it for reading, so it's mukta. However, the Gemara says, Lohi, this is not the case. Shorting the Tzotulim is shorting the mikra. You are allowed to move such a scroll on Shabbos, and you are allowed to learn from it. Why? Because we see that Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish used to look into a sefer of Agadtas on Shabbos, even though this is before Torah Shabbat Peh started being written down, which the Gemara will start discussing soon. Nevertheless, they had a sefer of Agadta, and they used to read from it on Shabbos. They used to look into it on Shabbos. So the question is, Lachora, such a thing is not allowed to be written because of Torah Shabbat Peh. But Ella, given the lecture, but since it's impossible otherwise, not everybody can. Rashi explains the problem is people were starting to forget. If you didn't write down the Agadtas, people would forget them, which is eventually why they started writing down the whole Torah Shabbat Peh. So therefore, Eis Lassus Hashem Efeder Torah Secha. So therefore, it's like the pasuk says, it's a time to do for Hashem. We have to break the Torah. The Chachamim have the power to tell us that in that case the rule of writing down Torah Shabbat Peh doesn't apply. Hachinami, the same thing when it comes to Haftarah. If you made each tzibur have an entire scroll, had an entire set of scrolls, a scroll of Yeshua, a scroll of Shoftim, etc., because Haftarah comes from all the different Nevi'im, they wouldn't be able to afford it, and they'd end up not laying Haftarah at all. Therefore, if given to Leapshire, since it's not possible, then we say, Eis Lassus Hashem, Hei Feder Tzara Secha, and it's all right to write one whole scroll of the Haftarah. So now, you're mentioning that it's not generally in Ashkenazi communities, it's specifically those who follow the Minhag HaGra, laying from an actual scroll of Haftarah. So in No, I think it is individual. I think it's only Haftarah. Those who follow the Minhag HaGra, they don't have a whole thing for Yeshua, for example.
Only
Haftarah, yeah. Okay, so the Noisei Kalim on Shulchan Aruch talk about it quite a bit. They talk about that on the face of it, since the Gemara is saying you're allowed to write it, then the same way that writing then should be no different than printing. In certain ways, printing has the same status as writing as far as halacha. Similarly, the implication is there's no difference really whether it's on parchment or on paper. Once it doesn't have the kedusha of a full sefer of Nevi'im anyway, then it doesn't really matter what material it's on. Therefore, they talk about that you should be allowed to use a printed chumash or a printed sefer of Haftarah or whatever, which is what most of the belt does. The Magen Avraham, the Taz talks about it. The Magen Avraham actually argues. He said the Magen Avraham says, look, nowadays they have printing, and that makes it cheap to produce Sfarim. Why should you be matir to lay in out of a chumash to lay in Haftarah out of a chumash? At least lay in out of a complete sefer of Haftarah, like the sefer of Haftarah that we have here in Shul. So he doesn't go so far as to say that he needed to be handwritten on parchment. That's the Vilna Gaon Siddush, but at least he says it should be a full book of Akeres. The Maaseh of the Veldt doesn't follow that. I mean, in practice, people often use those books of Akeres because they're larger and easier to read from. But in principle, there's no obligation. There's no difference between that. According to most poskim, there's no difference between that and a regular chumash. Interesting thing, by the way, about this Eitz Lasis Lashem we're going to be talking about it in connection with writing Torah Shebal Peh, the famous thing brought about Reb Nosson Adler, one of the Chassam Sofer's Rebbes, he didn't write down his Chiddush Torah, and in fact there's very little that we have from him about what he taught. There's excerpts that occasionally the Chassam Sofer quotes and some of his other Talmudim quote from him, but that's about it. They say, why is that? Because he said, since the Vort is, you're only allowed to write Torah Shebal Peh because people were getting forgetful, and therefore Eitz Lasis Lashem, he said, I have a perfect memory. I don't have a heter to write it down for myself so that I don't forget. So therefore, he didn't write it.
And you know about anything?
I guess not. So again, I'm sorry for quotes the occasional vote from him, so does some of his other Talmudim, but yeah. Bavin Abayim Rabba. Ma'u lichtet Megillah l'tinik l'islamet ba. Are you allowed to write a Megillah, a scroll of an individual section of the Torah to teach a child? Meaning you can't necessarily write a whole Sefer Torah for a child to learn. Even a whole Chumash is a bit much for him to handle. Can you write a particular parasha, a particular section of it? Tiboy lemando amat Torah Megillah Megillah nitna. Tiboy lemando amat Torah Chasuma nitna. And you can ask the question by saying, according to both of the opinions, how the Torah was originally given. Was it originally that Moshe wrote down each section as Hashem told it to him, and then at the end of it, that's called Megillah Megillah Nitna, so he wrote down one Megillah at one time and one at various times throughout the 40 years, and at the end he bound it all together and had one whole Sefer Torah.
Or he wrote it in one shot.
Or Chasuma Nitna, that it was all given to him at one shot. Yeah, so Tosfos discusses a little bit about if we say Torah Chasuma Nitna, we have last week's parasha in Mishpatim by Yitzchak Sefer Abris. It says that Moshe took and he read out to them Sefer Bereishis and half of Shmos up to that point where they were holding in the Torah. So Tosfos says, according to the day, Torah Chasuma Nitna means that it was written in order of how it is in the final Sefer Torah, meaning even if something was said out of order, he still waited to write it until the parts that come before it in the Torah were written, as opposed to Megillah Megillah, that would mean that it was written as individual parts and then afterwards assembled altogether. Tipper the Manda Amma Megillah Megillah Nit Torah Megillah Megillah Nitna, because you could argue given the Megillah Megillah Nitna, since originally the Torah was given as separate documents to Moshe Rabbeinu, then Kosvin, then now you should be able to write separate documents also. A Dilma given to Idbak Idbak. Or you could argue, no, once it was all stuck together, once Hashem told him to sew it all together and make one big Sefer Torah, then that's it. No, you can't go back to the Megillah way of thinking anymore. Hashem told him at the end, Makayach Sefer Torah, I think Moshe's going to quote the passage in a moment. Take the Sefer Torah, yeah. And to boil them under the Torah Chasuma Nitna, you can also ask the question according to the day that the Torah was originally given as one unit. Given the Chasuma Nitna Ein Kosvin, you could argue since it was given as one unit altogether at the end of the 40 years, then that means you can't write sections of it. Or Dilma, given the lecture, or maybe since it's not possible otherwise, because how else are you going to teach children? You can't expect them to learn from a whole Sefer Torah, Chasuma Nitna, maybe we should be allowed to write it. Or Malay, so Rabba tells it Ein Kosvin. No, you're not allowed to write such a thing. Well, Matam, what's the reason? Look, he's Shane Kosvin, because you're not allowed to write. Well, because we go according, you were asking that, even if it was written as individual Megillus, given to Idbak, eventually it was all attached together, and that's it. Yes, that's how it is. Once it was attached together, you can't go back to Megillus. On the side of it, he would bring an explanation, because that's how it is. Once it was all... It was once upon a time it was Megillus, but then it was taken away from the status of Megillus and turned into one big Sefer Torah, and now you can't go back.
Yeah, so I did all at once.
Okay, so we said before you can write Chumashim at least, but that's because the Mefarshim say that the thing is, at least within, because the difference is, we know in the Torah we darshan Smuchim, we darshan often that because it mentions two topics, one after the other, then we learn certain dinim from them, you don't do that from one Chumash to another. Therefore, each Chumash can be considered a unit of itself. But within each Chumash itself, you can't write smaller units. On the side of it here, by the way, brings another explanation from the Aruch that Rabbah is telling Abayim, I have a Kabbalah. We have a Kabbalah that you're not allowed to write smaller parts of the Sefer Torah. You're asking why you can't? Because you can't. That's how it is. Those are the rules.
So you have to write a whole Chumash minimum.
Well, wait. Almost, okay. Eisvei, so Abayim asks him, I have a Stira. A Mishnah tells us in Yuma as he off the tablet of she Yomiyamalka, also besides the she given to the Smithish a golden candelabra, the different explanations of what it is exactly, also she gave a golden board, Shaparsha Sota Ksuvale, the Parsha Sota was written on it this way, the Kohenim could copy the words off it when they're writing out a Megillah for the Sota. And that's only a part of the Sefer Torah. The answer is Amr Shimon Lakish Mishrim Yana be Aleph Beis. Yes, but it was written in Aleph Beis. So what does that mean? Rashi says it means they only wrote the initials of the words. So for example, it's sort of im lo shachav ish oisach. So they write Aleph Lamed Shin Aleph, for example. No, just the initials of each of the words, and the Kohen would know the words from that. There's different other explanations among the Mepharshim what it means. Also, the Marshal talks about that it, maybe it was written, the words were written out without any spaces between the words. Im lo shachav ish oisach. And then again, the Kohen has to know to break it up into words. No, it doesn't make a difference. And there's another explanation also that was written like with the letters scattered around, like maybe with spaces between the letters. Anyway, so I asked him, what do you mean? The Braita says, when the Kohen is writing out the Megillah for the Sota, he would look at the tablet, and he'd write what it says on the tablet, implying that it has the actual words, word by word. And so it's Amakim Ashokos of the tablet. Okay, not exactly like it says on there, but like what it says on there. According to Rashi, he'd look at the initial and he'd know the whole word from it. According to the other possibility, he'd know where one word begins and one word ends.
Word by word.
Yeah, word by word. He asked him, I have another Braisa that says, Kosev Roya of a tablet, Kosev Mashokos of a tablet. When he's writing, he looks at the tablet and writes what it says on the tablet. Mahu cost of a tablet, what does it actually say on the tablet? It says the actual words, im shachav, im lo shachav, if this person laid with you, if he didn't. Okay, im shachav, Rashi points out, is not actually words in the process, it's the Gemara's paraphrasing. Anyway, the point is, it seems it said the actual words. The answer is, hachav ma'eskin b'sirugin. Yes, but what we mean over here is, it was written on the tablet, b'sirugin. So Rashi says that what they did is, they wrote the first word of each sentence, and then the initials of all the other words. So let's say im lo shachav ish oisach. So we say im, then lamed shin aleph aleph, standing for lo shachav ish oisach. The first word in full, and then the initials of the rest of the words.
But that's on the tablet or the class?
On the tablet, no. On the class, it had to be written out in full. And the Rambam has a different explanation of the Sirugim. The Rambam says it means they would write on the tablet. It was written only three words on a line: im lo shachav ish oisach, im, etc. So that's allowed because that doesn't look anything like a sefer. This is actually like a machloekes tanoim, this question of whether you're allowed to write parts of the Torah, whether you're allowed to write, like we were saying, a Megillah for a child to learn out of, rather than writing them a whole Chumash. A Braisa says, "Ein koytsim Megillah latinically, but you're not allowed to write a Megillah for a child to learn from it. But if you're writing it only as a partial thing, and then eventually you're planning to finish it into a complete Chumash or a complete Sefer Torah, mutter, then you're allowed to." Rabbi Yehuda, that's the Tanakh. On the other hand, Rabbi Yehuda, no, you are allowed to write parts. But Bereshit at Dura Mabel, from Chumash Bereshit, if you're starting the child learning from Chumash Bereshit, you're allowed to write a Megillah that goes until the Dura Mabel, which means basically the whole Parshas Bereshit, is considered one Megillah of its own, one unit of Chumash, which you're allowed to write for itself. And in Teres Koinim, meaning Vayikra, you'd be allowed to write until Vayi Vayimashmini. The whole parasha is Vayikra and Sab is considered one unit because it all talks about the dinim of the Korbanos. So we see, we have a Machlokes Tanoim whether you're allowed to write such a Megillah. Omer Rav Yochanan Meshum Rabbana, who the halacha is like, by the way, is Machlokes Rishonim itself. The Rambam paskins like a Chachamim that you can only write a complete Chumash together. The Rish paskins like Rav Yehuda. That you can write a Megillah individually, and the Rishonim have a bit of a time explaining why does the Rish paskin like a Das Yachad, like Rabbi Yehuda, against the Rabbim. Omer Rabbi Yechon Meshum Rabbana, going back to, we said before, how was the Torah given to Moshe Rabbeinu? In individual sections, it was one big thing. Torah Megillah Megillah. Now the Torah was given one Megillah at a time. Again, Moshe wrote down each section as the Eibishter told him, and then at the end he assembled it all together. Shenema, the pasuk says, "Ozamarti hine basi." David HaMelech says on himself, "Then I said, now I've come the Megillah Sefer Kosev Olai. It is written about me in the Megillah of the Sefer." What does this mean? We know, we learned back in Yevamos a year ago that there were big shilas about David's lineage because he was descended from Rus Amoyavia, and the halakha of Amoni v'lay Amonis was not well known. What happened? So David is saying, "Hinei Bossi, now I've come. Now I can fully enter and then be part of the Jewish people." Why? Because when the Torah was given already, Kosovo Lai, there's something written about me in there. The Megillah Sefer, and the Megillah that afterward, in one Megillah that afterwards came and was assembled into the Sefer, the Sefer Torah. It actually says which Megillah, the one that tells the story of Lot, the one that tells the story of Lot and his daughter who's getting out of Sodom. The pasuk mentions that the Malachim tell him to take a shtebin esecha and imtzoi, your two daughters who are found. So that implies that the two daughters from whom Ruth and Naamah Hamoines are going to descend. Matsasi David Ati. Right? In Sodom, yeah. Matsasi David. Where did I find David? Ultimately, his lineage comes from Sodom, from those two daughters who came with Lot and who came with Lot out of Sodom. So therefore, we see that the Torah can be called a Megillah. David is saying that section of the Torah, that Megillah that contains the story of Lot and his daughter getting out of Sodom, is the Megillah that was written for my sake to say that I'm entitled to be full-fledged part of the Jewish people.
Yeah.
No, so the vote would be that was a Megillah. In other words, at one point the Eibishter dictated that section to Moshe, and he wrote it down in a scroll. Then the Eibishter dictated him another section, and he wrote it down in another scroll, and later on he sewed them all together. So therefore, the point is, we see the Megillah Sefer, we see that the Torah can be called a Megillah. So therefore, yes, therefore it was given Megillah, one section at a time. Reb Shimon Lakish, I'm a Torah Chasuman. Reb Lakish says the Torah was all given as one big thing at the end of the 40 years, or actually, according to Tosafot, it's a little bit differently, not necessarily all as one bit, as one thing at the end of the 40 years, but it was written dafka in order. If the Eibishter told Moshe a later portion, like we're going to see soon, the Eibishter, for example, the parasha of Parah Adumah was set on Rosh Chodesh Nissan, even though it was set on Rosh Chodesh Nissan when the Mishkan was put up, which means chronologically it belongs someplace at the end of Shemot, even though it's in Sefer Bamidbar, but Moshe didn't write it down until the previous parts of Bamidbar had been written. So Rosh Lakish is Torah Chasuma Nitna, Shenema, because the Pasuk says, L'koyach HaSefer HaTorah HaZeh, the Eibishter tells him, take this Sefer Torah, which implies that this Sefer Torah, that one big thing. He wrote it at the end of the 40 years, yeah. Okay, the Hidach Nami Haksiv Lakayach, what does Rabbi Yochanan do with Rosh Lakish's Pasuk Lakayach? The answer is that Hula Basa the Hidbach. That's after Moshe had put it all together, then the Eibishter tells him, now take the Sefer Torah and give it to the, and put it next to the Aron, and it should be a keepsake for the Jewish people. The Hidach Nami Haksiv Megillah Sefer, what does Rosh Lakish do with the Pasuk Megillah Sefer Klasov Alai? The answer is that Hula, the Kala Torah Kula Ikra Megillah. Rish Lakish would say that all that shows us is the whole Torah together can be called a Megillah. Just here, by Yomer Eli, as we find a pasuk in Zechariah, the Malach says to me, "What do you see, Mataroya? What do you see, Va'omer?" And I said, "Ani roya Megillah Afa. I see a folded scroll." The Gemara explains in Eruvin that scroll that he saw is actually the Sefer Torah. The Gemara makes a calculation over there that the Torah is larger than the world because if you unfold the scroll and calculate the dimensions of it, whatever. Yeah, it's Gemara in Eruvin. Yeah, that's
the Sefer Torah is larger than the world.
In a certain sense, yeah. In a certain sense, yeah. But the scroll that so Zechariah was shown a vision of a scroll of a certain size to represent the idea that the Torah is larger than the world. So therefore we see the whole Torah together can be called Megillah. Rashi over there on not wrapped. So Rashi on the Gemara in Eruvin there explains that Offa means folded. Because the Gemara explains that the pasuk says over there it was 20 amos by 10 amos, and if you unfold it, then you have 20 by 20, and the Gemara makes calculations over there about the respective size of the world in the Eibishter's units, Kaviyachol, because these amos are not ordinary human amos, they're Kaviyachol Hashem's amos, which are much larger than ours. But in context, in the pasuk over there, they're on the far, I think Rashi on the pasuk actually says that often means flying, yeah. Inami, or another possibility, L'chid Rav Levi. Rish Lakish would say that you can use the pasuk of the Megillah Sefer to teach us what Rav Levi said, that there are parts of the Torah that were written as individual Megillahs. Tosfos learns differently. Tosfos says that it's not Inami. The Gemara is telling us a new statement, that Rav Levi wants to inform us that when certain parts of the Torah were said. Shmoyah Parashiyas Nemru B'Riyam Shavokam B'Yam Mishkan. There were 8 Parashiyas that were said to Moshe on the day the Mishkan was set up, Chodesh Nissan. Abraham, Parashiyas Koyanim. The parasha of the Koyanim, which means the beginning of parashas Emor, which talks about the halachas of the Koyanim. They needed to know that because they're going to start doing the Avodah that day. Well, Parshas Leviim, and the Parsha of Leviim, which is the beginning of Bahalos, someone to tell us about the designation of Leviim to serve in the oil mode and how they have to be waved and shaved, and they have to be shaved and waved and so forth. Parshas Tmeim. Rashi says Parshas Tmeim is the part of Bahalos over there where it talks about what a person who's Tomei Mes should do about the Korban Pesach. Tosfos argues on that because if that was said Rosh Chodesh Nissan, why didn't they have time to become Tahor by Pesach? The whole point is that people were saying we don't have a chance to become Tahor before Pesach. What are we going to do? And Moshe has to tell them about Pesach Sheni. But Tosfos instead learns that Parshas Tmeim means another section of Parshas Emor, which talks about the dinim of Tumah Vatara as they relate to Kohenim doing the Avodah and eating Truma and so forth. Also, Nogea right there on the spot.
Well, they would have had
14 days. Yeah, they only needed 7 days. Okay, so Marsha says that maybe what Rashi means to say is that Moshe is telling them if there's anybody who doesn't have a chance to become Tahor by Pesach, then they're going to have to be Nitzchel Pesach Sheni. Well, Parshas Shiluach Tmeim, the fourth one that was set up there in Rosh Chodesh Nissan is the Parsha of Shiluach Tmeim in Parshas Nase, when it says that all the Tmeim have to be sent out of the Machne. Again, so now the Machna is officially being set up, so now they need to be sent away.
What was
that? Rosh Chodesh Nissan, I think. The fifth one is Parshas Achrimos, the parasha of the Dinim of Yom Kippur. It was Achrimos Shnei Bnei Aaron. That was after they died, which was on Rosh Chodesh Nissan. So Parshas Shmini Yayin, the section in Parshas Shmini, right after Nadav and Abihu died, when the Eved tells Aaron that people who are drunk, that Kohenim who are drunk, are not allowed to enter the Oil Moed. Or Parshas Neiros, the beginning of Baha'u'llah, so when it talks about lighting the menorah. Or Parshas Parah Aduma, and the section of Parah Aduma at the beginning of Chukas. So all those were said that day, because these are all things they need to know right then and there. So the Avodah in the Mishkan at the beginning. Yeah, Achrimos is in Kippur, but Rashi says it was said that day because since Aaron's sons died, for one reason was because they came in, they made an unauthorized entry into the Kodesh HaKadoshim, therefore, right on the spot, they just had to tell Moshe to tell Aaron that you don't do that. And Marsha points out that, I mean, practically speaking, there must have been other parashiyas they needed to learn around that time also, the parasha of the Talmud, the parasha of the Chavitin, all the other things that have to do with the daily Avodah, but they said they had the Kabbalah that only 8 parashiyas were taught that day. Although there's a footnote in the Chut Sichas that references I think 6 of Zutrasi or something that says there were 15 sections of the Torah that were sent to Moshe on that day. Okay. Amar Rabbi Elazar, since we're talking about Torah Shebichtav and the writing of it, Torah Roiv Bichtav Umiyot Alpeh. Most of the Torah is in writing, and only a small portion of it is Alpeh. The pasuk says, "Echta lo ruber terasi." I would write him most of my Torah. Because my zohar nachshavu, they're considered like strangers. What that means, we'll talk about in a few lines.
The Gemara is much bigger.
So one explanation that they say is one explanation that Rishonim say is that originally Torah Shebaal Peh just considered. Remember, I mean, one reason why the Gemara is so very large is because you have all the different dayas and the discussion of all the different dayas and all. When the Torah was originally given to Moshe Rabbeinu, you didn't have all the machlokas in yet. Machlokas only became a thing of more than 1,000 years after the Torah was given. Up to that point, you had a machlokas that immediately got decided by the Sanhedrin. So therefore, the original, according to one way of looking at it, the original Torah Shebaal Peh was much smaller. Yeah. Another way of looking at it is, there's a few different ways that Mephoshim have of looking at it, that maybe what we mean by Torah Shebaal Peh is the halachas that we only know Baal Peh, and there's no source for them in Torah Shebichtav at all. Meaning anything that we can learn with the Yerbil Midas, Shatar Nidrashasem, is in a certain sense part of Torah Shebichtav. And therefore we can say Torah Shebichtav is the majority. There's only a small number of halachas that are Baal Peh. Rabbi Yechanan Amar Roi Baal Peh Omiyat Bichtav. Rabbi Yechanan says it the other way around. Most of it is Baal Peh, only a small portion of it is Bichtav. Because the Eved says to Moshe, it's on the mouth of these words. Al pi advar ma'ela, implying only what's said on the mouth. Yeah, that I made a bris with you. The idach nami achsil echtav le'rubei terasi. What does Rabbi Yechanan do with the pasuk echtav le'rubei terasi, which implies that most of the Torah is written? The answer is. That is, the Eved is speaking through the Navi. He's wondering. It's not a statement. It's a question. It's a rhetorical question. Should I write out for the Jewish people the majority of my Torah? How like to my zone, Achshavu? After all, even Rashi says, even the part that I wrote out for them, they're like strangers to it. They don't learn it enough. How much more so if I...
What are you referring to?
He's referring to, in other words, that the Jewish people were slacking off on learning Torah. So why should I bother writing more of it if even the part that is written they're not focusing much on? Tertius gives a different explanation.
The part written is not focused on, therefore...
Therefore, let's keep more of it about that, so they have to harder on it. Tertius gives a different explanation. No, so that's the thing. Most of the Torah is not written, and most of the Torah is about that, yeah. That's the Rebbeinu thing, yeah. Tertius brings a different explanation based on a Medrash that, like this, the Torah Shebichsav, the Goyim rewrote for themselves, they translated, they rewrote for themselves, and they claimed it as their own. If Torah Shebaal Peh had been written, they would have done the same thing with it. They never claimed Torah Shebaal Peh as their own because in their times it wasn't written down yet. There's actually the Medrash, I think it's the same Medrash or maybe a different one, where the Goyim at some point come and claim, you know, we're the real Jews, as we know, various religions have tried to do that. So the Mishnah tells them, basically, do you have a secret password? What's the secret password? The Mishnah is. And they don't have it. So therefore, haloi k'moi zon nechshav. So therefore, echtav l'rubit terasi. Should I write, according to this explanation, it's echtav l'rubit terasi. Should I write most of my Torah for them? Haloi k'moi zon nechshav. Then they'll be no different than the goyim. Like this, we have to ask something that the Jewish people are special with. That's Torah Shebaal Peh. The idach nami oksiv ki apiyad dvorim ha'ila. Okay, what does Rebbe Lazar do with the pasuk ki apiyad dvorim ha'ila, which implies that Torah Shebaal Peh is the majority? The answer is hahu mishum tkifil migmirinu. That is because it's not that they're the majority. The majority is Torah Shebichsav. But Torah Shebaal Peh is very difficult to learn. And therefore, the Ebrish is saying, it's because of that I'm making a bris with you. Because that's, even though it's a smaller part, according to Rebbe Lazar, nevertheless, it's the harder part.
Migmar
to learn it. Meloshon Gemara. Okay. Further on that pasuk, Dorash Rabbi Yehuda ben Achmeni, Meturgamani, Rav Shimon Lakish. Rabbi Yehuda ben Achmeni was the Meturgamon of Rish Lakish. He darshened. Ksiv. One pasuk says Ksav l'cha es advar meila. One pasuk says the Ebishter says to Moshe at the end of Parshas Kisisa, write down these words for yourself. Ochtiv, and the pasuk continues that same pasuk ki al pi advar meila, because on the mouth of these words. So what is it? Is it writing or is it bal peh? Okay, so that famous thing. Dvarim shebichtav yatzei rashoi la'omer al peh. Things that are supposed to be written, Torah shebichtav, you're not allowed to say bal peh. Dvarim shebal peh yatzei rashoi la'omer b'chtav. Things that are supposed to be bal peh are not supposed to be said out of writing. So how tactical do we do it? There was a lot of discussion in Or Chaim in connection with saying brachas and not brachas, korbanos and shema and so forth. What about saying it's al peh? A lot of different explanations how we're allowed to do that, how we're allowed to say shema, al yashir, different other psukim that we say. A lot of different explanations, including if it's familiar to the average person, like shema, there is, then you're allowed to. If you're not doing it to be motzi tzibur, you're allowed to. Like this, you're not doing it to be motzi, you're doing it for yourself to daven. If you're saying it as a shvach to the Eibishter, the praise to the Eibishter, rather than as learning, then you're allowed to. There's a variety of different explanations. And then as far as Dvarim Shebaal Peh, you're not allowed to say them. B'Ksav, that's like we said on Amud Aleph, Eis Lachas L'Hashem Efeir Tzertasecha. There came a point when the whole thing was in danger of being forgotten, and therefore the Chachmei Adoris Vidyevit said that we're allowed to write it. Right. Drei Rabbi Shmuel Tana, in the yeshiva of Rabbi Shmuel, they taught a different explanation. The pasuk says Eila, ki al piyad varma Eila, which implies Eila after kosev, you're allowed to write these words of the Torah Shebichsav, the after kosev halachas, but we're implying but you're not allowed to write down the halachas, which is Torah Shebichsav. The Ebishter made a covenant with the Jewish people only because of Torah Shebichsav. Shenem, as opposed to this, ki al pi advarim ha'ela, because on the mouth of these words, karati itcha bris ves Yisrael, I've made with you and with the Jewish people a covenant. No, but that's that. Al pi advarim ha'ela means that. When the Ebishter gave the second lochus, there's a medrash that says that the Ebishter says to Moshe, you know, it's true the second luchas have a lot, are not on as high a level as the first ones. They're not directly carved out and written by the Eved, or written by the Eved, so they're not carved out by the Eved, so the second one is Sol L'chol Moshe has to carve them out. There's many other things that don't come along with them. But the Eved says to them, don't feel bad, along with the second Luchos is coming all Tzoros Shel Ha'Peh.
The first one
Eved didn't give with it, it's all the details, he's not all the details of Tzoros Shel Ha'Peh. And the Luchos are shown as broken on the second one, they weren't, yeah. And Hayom Yom of Shavuot of the Talmud is it has all the pros and cons of the first verse.
So you make a
breeze
on just Tzoros Shel Ha'Peh. You have to have both.
No, but it means, in other words, that's the breeze that the Eved has with us is that we'll, it, obviously, it's enough, because Tzoros Shel Ha'Peh we have written. That's the, you don't need as much of a breeze for that. It's written. That's the, you know, it's going to continue, but that's a Tzoros Shel Ha'Peh that should be continued to be learned. That you need a breeze for. And that's
so
it.
No,
but again, that's Tzoros Shel Ha'Peh. We say it Baal Peh for one reason, because it's so familiar that we're allowed to say it Baal Peh. This is, by the way, when we have, in morning brachas, we have three brachas on the Torah. I don't remember the details. It's been a while since I've looked at it, but if I remember correctly, one of the reasons why we have three different brachas for the same mitzvah of learning Torah, among others, one of them is for Tzoros Shel Ha'Peh, and one of them is for, I think Al Divrei Torah is for Tzoros Shel Ha'Peh, and Behar Ivna is for Tzoros Shel Ha'Peh.
But
that may also be, yeah. That could also be. The bracha Hashem Bachabanu that is for Tzoros Shel Ha'Peh, and then the bracha Hashem Nachamanu that you say at the end would be for Tzoros Shel Ha'Peh. The Mishnah had said, Ma'arvin b'bayis yashem b'fnei darchei shalom, that you make an eruv in the same, or you keep the eruv in the same house it was all along because of darchei shalom. Question is, my timer. What's the darchei shalom exactly? Ilayim mishum covered. Is it because of the covered of the balabas of the owner of the house? No. V'ha'hu shipura. You have this shofar. They have a mikra beir of Yehuda. Originally, it was in the house of Rav Yehuda when he was the Rosh Hashiva in Pompadissa. All the soif beir Rabba. After him, it was in Rabba's house. All the soif beir of Yosef. Then Rav Yosef. All the soif beir Abaya. And then Abaya's house. They were the four successive Rosh Yeshiva of Pompadissa during about the first 80 years or so of that Yeshiva's history.
So
we see it move from place to place. What shofar? So Rashi says two possibilities. One is it means the shofar that they used to blow on Erev Shabbos as a signal, as it says in the Masechta Shabbos, to tell people to stop work and to light candles and bring in Shabbos. Then Rashi brings a second explanation from Rav Shura Goyen, and Tosis also agrees with this, that it means a shofar means a pushka. Pushka can be called a shofar. It's called that in a bunch of places, a chaff, because it's shaped like a shofar. It has a narrow opening on top and a wide one on the bottom. So it means the pushka that they had to collect funds. It's called a shofar, and it means the pushka that they used to collect funds for the yeshiva.
But it was not a shofar; it was a
power. It was shaped like a shofar, whatever. Yeah. The Meiri brings the third possibility. Actually, it may have been the shofar that they used for putting people in cheder. Whatever it is, we see it move from house to house. So the lechora, there's no problem of covered involved. Ela b'shem chashda. So no, the reason we don't move the eruv from one house to another is because of chashad. What's the chashad? So Rashi says the chashad is people are used to, when they come into this chotzer, they're used to finding, when they come to visit so-and-so's house, they're used to finding the eruv food in that house. If now they don't find it in there anymore, they're not going to realize it was moved to another house. They're going to think, hey, the people in this chotzer are carrying without having made an eruv. That's the chashad. Tosfos brings a second possibility, that it means that people are going to say, you know why they moved the eruv from his house? He must have been stealing some of the food. He must have been taking it for himself. And therefore, they had to move it to somebody else's house.
They used to do it
every week individually. Every week. It wasn't like nowadays where you put aside a box of matzah for the year. Yeah. And then the Rambam gives a third possibility of what the chashad is. The owner of the house is going to suspect them that, now the din is, the Gemara tells us in Eruvin, that each household in the chotzer has to contribute food towards the eruv, except for the house where the eruv is actually being placed. They don't have to. So therefore, if now it's being moved from that house, that malabas is going to suspect them. Why are you moving it away from my house? You want to make me have to? You want to make me have to contribute food now? So yeah. The Mishnah had said, "Borsho Kodav La'am Mechula," that a well, or not a well, a cistern, a pit where for water, which is closest to the stream, gets filled up first. So the Gemara says, "Itma." They had a discussion about Bnei Nara, people who have fields alongside the river. Now, so the river runs, the river runs along the field. Which one, not really alongside the field, which ones get to use the water from it first? Rav Amar Tatoi Shoptamai Bereisha. Rav says the people lower downstream, get to use the water first. Or Shmuel Amar Eloi Shoptamai Bereisha. Shmuel says the ones on the upper river go first. Vidmezal. Now, when the river is flowing, when it's just flowing along, they're not. Now, there's two possible ways, right? You can have the river is flowing, and you just go over there and fill up with buckets or whatever and water your field. No, not summer versus winter. There's two different ways of doing it. You can have where just everybody goes to the river and fills up buckets or whatever. So, or you can have where actually what you do is in order to water this field, let's say, you dam up the river over here, wait till the water overflows into a canal or whatever that goes into your field, then you unblock it, let the water keep on flowing to the next one, and so forth. So bidda mazel, if the river is flowing and just everybody is drawing from it with buckets or whatever, kulam ala tligid, and there's no machlokas, everybody can just do, and everybody can just draw water, whatever they want. One person is not interfering with the other. Keep tligid with miska vashkuye. The machlokas is when they have to dam up each section and water their part.
Miska is what?
Miska means to dam it up. So Shmuel Amar Eloi Shosamai Bereisha. So Shmuel says the ones upstream get to use the water first. Damri, because they can argue on Anmakavin and say, we're closer to the water source, therefore we should get it first. Rav Amar Tatoi Shosamai Bereisha. Rav says the ones downstream get first. Damri, Narak Pashtalezel, they say, better let the river flow as much as possible according to its normal course. So if it has to be dammed up, we, who are the furthest down, let the water flow as much as possible to us, and then we'll dam it up, and then the people further upstream can do that.
Except that there's much more water in downstream than upstream.
No, what are you talking about? They're not the water. No, we're not talking about when there's other rivers flowing into the side. It's just one river, yeah. Let's consider how this fits with our Mishnah. We said in our Mishnah that a pit that's closest to the stream of water, the Salarishan, gets filled first, and Mepetak Hashalim. So that fits according to Shmuel. How does that fit with Rav? That would have to be the one. The answer is Tirgum Shmuel. A little bit of Rav. The Rav Shmuel explained it in accordance with Rav. That is Ba'am Hamisalachas Al Pivori. The case is where the stream of water runs right next to the pit. So you're not talking the pit is some distance away. It's right next to it. So the question is Yachim Ayla Memra. If that's the case, then what's the Chiddush? Why would we think that? Why would we think it shouldn't be filled first?
Right.
The answer is Ma'ud Tema, because you still might think Mati Amrile, because the other people who live along that river, who live along that stream, can tell the owner of that well, Sacha Miskar, they should tell him maybe you close off the opening into your pit, the Ashki Behindaza, and then you'll take your turn. You'll take your turn. Instead of keeping the channel to your burr, which is granted it's right next to the river, but instead of keeping the channel open and your burr is going to get filled up first and only then is the water going to continue flowing down to get to us, no, you close up yours, let the water get to us first, then you can open up yours and fill it up. No, that's the Kamash Malon, that's the Chiddush. Since it's right next to it, then he doesn't have to do that. That doesn't prove to the general case when you have fields next to it and each one needs.
Yeah.
Kamash Malon, that we don't do that yet. So what's the halacha? Amar Rav Huna bar Chalifa hashtud lo it ba'aliyuchta lo kamar v'lo kamar. Given that in the end we don't have the halacha clearly like Rav or like Shmuel, called the alvin kvar. Then whichever one gets there first, gets there first. Basically, now usually the halacha is like Shmuel when it comes to dini mamonis. So Rashi says Rav Huna bar Chalifa didn't hold with that. Tosfos says that maybe he said even though usually the halacha would be like Shmuel, here Rav's reason seems to be more logical and therefore maybe we should follow Rav. So that's why he said called alvin kvar.